Welcome to the Strategy Driven Editorial Perspective Podcast, where we examine the marketplace uncertainty created by today's headline events and the actions business leaders should take to ensure their organizations succeed under these circumstances. Today, I am joined by Jim Champy, author of Reengineering Healthcare, a manifesto for radically rethinking healthcare delivery. Jim will share with us his thoughts on the recently enacted healthcare law and what business leaders can do to help promote better health and wellness among their workforce. So without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Jim Champy, author of Reengineering Healthcare, a manifesto for radically rethinking healthcare delivery, and chairman emeritus of consulting for Dell Services. He is recognized throughout the world for his work on leadership and management issues and on organizational change and business reengineering. Jim's first book, Reengineering the Corporation, A Manifesto for Business Revolution, sold more than 3 million copies and spent more than a year on the New York Times bestseller list. He also authored the bestseller Reengineering Management, A Mandate for New Leadership, which was recognized by Business Week as one of the top 10 business books of 1995. His columns and articles appear in such magazines as Forbes, Computer World, Sales and Marketing Management, Leader to Leader, and Baseline. Jim, welcome to the Strategy Driven Editorial Perspective Podcast.
Nathan, it's good to be with you once again.
I'm really glad to have you back, and I'm particularly glad to have you back to talk about such an important topic that is covering our headlines, and I think is on the minds of most Americans right now, and that is, of course, healthcare.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Well, Jim, to start with, I wanted to ask you what you see as being the fundamental issues with our current healthcare system, and if you believe the recently passed healthcare reforms will adequately adjust the challenges.
You know, Nathan, let me speak to the healthcare reforms first.
Okay.
The legislation that we recently passed in this country really is not broad healthcare reform. Rather, it's insurance reform. And what we've done with this legislation is provide insurance to a large number of uninsured, something that I think we just had to do, a fundamental issue that we had to address. But the underlying issue, the issue that's still on the table that we have not by any means fully addressed, are the issues of the continued very high cost of health care, as well as the fact that, you know, that health care delivery still remains relatively unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Nathan, there are still big issues to deal with about health care costs and the safety and quality of care.
So it sounds like while well-intentioned, the government reform really isn't going to probably resolve our healthcare issues.
You know, Nathan, what the government reform does is it really starts the process, and it does so by setting policy and some requirements, hopefully to, again, reduce the cost of health care and to improve its cost. For example, in the new health care legislation, you know, there's a requirement that insurance companies effectively spend 80% of what they take in terms of premiums on actual care delivery. You know, that's a very important policy to establish, because if you looked at some healthcare, you know, insurance companies, you'd find that they were spending 40 to 50% on administrative costs and only about half of what they take in on the real delivery of care. So what the government's done with that policy change is at least put in place the requirement for insurance companies to become radically more, you know, efficient in how they operate. You know, the government's also put in place, Nathan, requirements that that hospitals disclose their quality, you know, standards. For example, how many, you know, errors did you have per 100 patients around the, you know, the delivery of the right medication or the delivery of the wrong medication to a patient. And so hospitals are now required to report on those numbers, again, with the belief that by setting that kind of practice and policy in place, hospitals and care deliverers will be forced to improve, you know, quality and the safety of care. But if you step back, there's still the question of, well, how does that really come about? How do you really improve the quality and safety of care? Mm-hmm. How do you get, you know, how do you get costs out? And the book that I just co-authored with Dr. Harry Greenspun, the Reengineering Healthcare book, is not a policy book. It's a book about how to get the work done, about how to actually look at the clinical work, the work of physicians, the work of nurses, the work of, you know, people who run hospitals. How do they really get the costs down? What's it going to take? And how do we get, you know, the safety of our healthcare system improved? And so, you know, you're right that the, you know, what the government has done itself won't solve these problems. Mm-hmm. These problems won't be solved by anyone other than the clinicians themselves.
Now, Jim, in your book, you do talk about the reengineering of healthcare. Could you give us a little insight as to what that means and the things that you see the practitioners of medicine doing so that they do deliver healthcare in a more efficient and a safer manner?
Sure. You know, Nathan, by reengineering healthcare, what I'm really talking about first is the delivery of care, how clinicians do their work. Mm-hmm. And it's a, the reengineering perspective is a perspective that looks at work from a process view, not an individual task or functional view, but from a process view. Like, you know, what's the process look like for getting, you know, a report from a radiologist back to an orthopedic surgeon, and how can we improve the accuracy of those reports, and how can we improve the speed of getting that information back from a radiologist to an orthopedic surgeon? It's about, you know, reengineering is about process change. But Nathan, what it takes is a combination of people doing the right thing, having the right skill, process, the actual redesign of work, and the information technology that enables the work change. So reengineering healthcare is a combination of people, process, and information technology.
Okay.
And I can give you, Nathan, if you'd like, a couple of examples of what I mean by that, you know, that really come from my research in the book.
Yes, please do.
You know, one of the examples is very simple. You know, not all reengineering, if you will, is rocket science. For example, one very large doctor's practice was experienced a large delay in some error rate between the time that a orthopedic surgeon requests an X-ray from the radiologist department. There were just long delays, and there were problems between the radiology department and the orthopedic surgeons. And so what the healthcare organization did was simply relocate the two organizations next to each other, literally took the walls down, required, you know, the folks who ran the radiology department or the folks who ran the orthopedics department to have a meeting every morning to go over, you know, what the work would look like for the day, and to, you know, to talk about how they were going to execute. Very, very simple change in process and in people and in behaviors. And then, Nathan, I saw much more what I would call elaborate and very successful moves in healthcare organizations in reengineering the delivery of care. One of the most inspiring examples that I saw was at a hospital down south by the name of Novant Health, the Novant Health System. You know, Novant noticed and recognized that they had a very high incident in their emergency room of people, particularly elderly people, coming into the emergency room with an adverse drug reaction of some kind.
Okay.
In fact, 18%, Nathan, of the people coming into the emergency room were having a problem with their pharmaceuticals or drugs.
Wow.
They had accidentally overdosed. These 11 were elderly people, or they had taken drugs that would interact badly. And what Novant recognized that a lot of those elderly patients, when discharged from the hospital, didn't really pay much attention to what they were being told in those last few hours about their, you know, about their drugs and the drug interactions and adverse reaction problems that could arise. Because, you know, when people are leaving a hospital, Nathan, they want to get out.
Yes.
You know, they're not sitting there saying, let me spend an extra hour and really listen. And the other thing that happens is when a patient leaves a hospital with a new set of prescriptions, they go home, but they still have stuff and medications in their medicine cabinet. And Nathan, there were a lot of cases where an elderly patient would be taking, you know, two doses, something that was in the medicine cabinet and something that had just been given them. So what Novant did was develop a very simple process, but it took the training of people. They put in place very sensitive pharmacists, hospital pharmacists, who had good sensibilities in working with patients, who 2 or 3 days after the patient got home called the patient and said, would you please take me through all the medications that you have in your medicine cabinet and tell me what you're doing today? What medications are you taking? How much and when? And Nathan, just that simple process.
Yes.
Reduced the adverse drug reaction cases in the emergency room from 18% down to 4%.
Wow.
4%. But you know, Nathan, it took a change in the way the hospital pharmacists operated. Because, by the way, in a hospital, a pharmacist never sees a patient traditionally. You know, they're in the back room packaging up those drugs. It took a change in the way physicians thought about who would call and interact with their patients. Initially, the physician said, what are these pharmacists doing calling my patients? So, again, it you know, is a combination of people and process and then some technology to really track and to let the physicians know what the pharmacists were hearing. But, again, an improvement from 18% down to 4%. That's an example, Nathan, of a more kind of a more elaborate reengineering project. But I saw a lot of examples that looked like that.
Sure. And that is a tremendous result to get from reengineering.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yep.
Now, Jim, what do you see as the role business leaders should play in this reengineering of the healthcare system in general, and maybe more specifically, how they should go about promoting health and wellness among their own workers?
You know, Nathan, I think there are several ways that business leaders can get involved in addressing this issue. And as you pointed out earlier in our discussion, it remains a huge issue. We simply can't afford to continue to be operating the way, you know, we're operating now in healthcare. And, of course, you know, business leaders are recognizing that. It's getting just too expensive for their companies to pay these costs. And so the first thing they need to do is really put pressure back on their insurance companies to become more efficient, to make sure that those companies are spending that 80 cents on every dollar on actual care.
Sure.
And not 50 cents on administrative processes. So you know, just not accepting the rates that insurance companies give them without some challenge, without pushing back and demanding more efficiency. Secondly, and you know, you see this in a lot of companies today, the implementation of health and wellness programs. But I think business leaders should go a bit farther, and I saw some interesting examples of this, of thinking about delivery of health care on site or nearby.
Okay.
You know, it's a big issue for a lot of employees to take time off when they're ill and go see a doctor. And there are issues of costs, and there are ways, I think, to build health care. But it's got to be done with confidentiality and the privacy that I think patients deserve, mm-hmm. but to build some more healthcare delivery actually into the workplace or nearby. So I think there are multiple things that business leaders can do. And business leaders also should continue to recognize that healthcare delivery is still a local phenomena and a local process. And although we have some very large now national hospital chains and hospital operations, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of what goes on in healthcare is still done within the community. And I think business leaders can take a more active role in making sure that the hospitals and physician practices in their community are of the quality that their community requires.
Okay. Now, Jim, do you see any business leaders maybe that you can point out or companies and maybe some of the specific things that they're doing as examples that our audience could go and,
sure.
and reference?
Sure. The Chicago Police Force, it mm-hmm. was a public leadership and actually union leadership, actually adopted, Nathan, the kind of program I was just describing of putting physicians into the police stations. You know, and again, and particularly in hard economic times, what the unions were recognizing, what the leaders of the police force were recognizing, is that police officers were just reticent to take time off from their beat and to go see a doctor, or if they had a problem, they just would let it go for too long. And Chicago saw some, again, considerable improvement in the health and well-being of their police officers by putting physicians into the police station. Now, interestingly, they did it in collaboration with a physician's practice, with a physician group practice that actually staffed the stations. The other thing that I believe and that I see happening more widely now is our companies, many, many companies, including my own a while back, putting in place more accountability on the, on the patient, if you will, on the employee, to understand the cost of healthcare and to make choices. And the way that typically comes about is to say to the employee, look, you're going to have to pay the first $1,000 or the first, few thousand dollars, depending on how generous you're able to be, of your health care. You pay it yourself. You make the choices. Nathan, very seldomly when we're confronted with a need for health care, do we ever ask the price or the cost?
Right.
You go for an oil change in your car, you want to know what that oil change is going to cost. But you go for a knee replacement, who asks the physician what's this going to cost? And so we're unfortunately, I think, badly trained as consumers. And one of the things, again, I'm seeing companies doing broadly is putting more risk and more accountability in the hands of their employees and in the hands of patients to actually manage some of the costs directly. I think that's one of the best things we can do. We've got to get, right until we get a real system of care, and if you step back, we talk about our healthcare system, Nathan, mm-hmm. but it's not a healthcare system. It's tremendously fragmented, set of delivery processes and people who take care of us. And until we get to a system of care that's a real system of care, the individual must do it himself or herself.
Right.
Unless you're fortunate enough to be a member of a group practice that can provide you with all of your healthcare services. There are some of those practices out there, but they're expensive, but they're good.
Yeah.
They're expensive, but good.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you not only for your time, but for your insights on the recently enacted healthcare law and what business leaders can do to help promote better health and wellness among their workforce. I really appreciated and couldn't agree more with your insights on increased transparency, heightened accountability, and responsibility that the law is going to help us get and that business leaders can promote amongst their workforce as well, all to help us be better, happier, healthier people. So thank you for joining us.
Nathan, we've just begun the process of change in healthcare. I think we've got to recognize that. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got a good 5 to 10 years ahead of hard work. But I'm an optimist, Nathan. We've got great clinicians in this country, wonderful nurses, wonderful doctors. But we just have to help them get to a better place in how they deliver their work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So thank you, Jim. I appreciate your being on the show.
Thank you. Good talking with you.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this edition of the Strategy-Driven Editorial Perspective Podcast. We've shared our view and invite you to share yours at www.strategydriven.com. Until next time, so long.